Decades ago, in the waiting room of a Minneapolis hospital, three expectant fathers nervously paced as they awaited news from beyond those swinging double doors. After a while, a nurse comes in and she informs the first father that he is now the proud papa of beautiful twins. "That's amazing," he exclaimed. He says, "I play for the Minnesota Twins." A little bit later, another nurse comes in and informs the second man that he now is the dad of triplets. "Incredible. I work for 3M, he says. At this point, the third man passes out and falls on the floor. The nurse quickly runs over and attends to the man. And as he comes to, she asks him, "Are you okay, sir? Are you feeling ill?" And he goes, "No, I'm fine, but I work for 7-Up.
Is there anything that stresses you out, right? What is it that just fills you with anxiety, right? Now, we live in a day and an age when worry is just assumed to be a normal part of life. Anxiety is expected. Now, we all worry sometimes, but what is alarming is how often worry is crippling our ability to live life. Came across some startling statistics. 43% of adults suffer negative health effects because of worry. And what's happening is these numbers are mushrooming the younger you are. So this started with the millennial generation, those that are, say, about 25 up to 40. We started seeing an increase in their levels of anxiety-related disorders. And among the I generation or Generation Z, those that are about 24 and younger, these numbers are skyrocketing. Did you know, for instance, that half of the people in the hospital at any given time could be diagnosed with some sort of chronic anxiety? 75% of all visits to primary care doctors are worry related. 275 million work days are lost every year to worry related absenteeism. And 31 million Americans suffer from insomnia. And a lot of that has to do with worry. It plays a major role. The bottom line is this: worry is killing us. Against all of this, the best the world can hope to do is to help you manage your worry. Keep it in check, right? You see, coping with anxiety is big business. We spend $42 billion a year dealing with worry. You can go see a counselor who might give you some techniques to help you deal with some of the anxiety. You can go visit a doctor who can prescribe some pills that will keep some of the effects of worry in check. Books dealing with stress and anxiety are perennial bestsellers. Or you can listen to an audio program to help you relax, you know, take the edge off of your worry. Now, all of those things can be helpful, and in some cases, they're absolutely necessary. I've got some great music that helps me chill, and there is no shame at all in going to see a professional counselor to help you walk through some of these issues. These are things that we have all needed at times. But must anxiety always be an unwelcome companion in life that we can only hope to keep it at arm distance away? In our core verse this week, which is found in Philippians 4:6, the Apostle Paul writes this: "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplications with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, through prayer and supplications, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. Let's start at the start, right? Do not be anxious about, it's a blank check, anything, right? Easy for Paul to say, right? Well, do I need to remind you of Paul's biography, all right? Let's see, imprisoned, shipwrecked, bitten by poisonous vipers, whipped with cat of nine tails, beaten with rods, targeted by murder plots, stoned, all right, and not the herbal kind, but the kind with rocks, all right, and some of these things multiple times. In fact, even as Paul writes this letter to the Philippians, he is a prisoner of Rome, all right? He is under guard. He is under lock and key. So Paul has a thing or two to worry about if, in fact, he wants to worry. And yet, Paul still seems to think that worry is optional, right? That worry is something we choose, and he says, don't choose it. Now, where would Paul get such an idea? What would make him think such a thing? Well, how about Jesus, right? A dozen times in the Gospels, Jesus says, do not worry. 17 times, Jesus says, do not be afraid. You see, overcoming worry isn't just a matter of your mental health or your physical health. It is essential to your spiritual health. Anxiety doesn't just keep us awake at night, make us walk the floors talking to ourselves. Worry doesn't just give us tension headaches or stomach ulcers, but it's an act of disobedience that attacks God's purpose in my life and in your life. But oh, we worry, don't we? Several years ago, Teresa and I were interviewing at a church in Illinois, and this was the part of the interview where you do like a Q&A with the whole congregation, and there was a lady there who asked me what I was so worried about, and I'm like, what do you mean worried about? You know, truth be told, well, I'm out of a job. I'm looking for a job, but she asked me what I was worried about, and I think, what makes her think I'm worried? And she says, well, you chew your nails, right? And I hadn't been chewing my nails. She just had noticed by looking. And I was like, it doesn't mean I'm worried. It's just kind of a bad habit, like, you know, chewing the end of your pen or drumming your fingers while you're thinking. But her comments stuck with me. So over the next several years, I tried to tackle this bad habit with varying degrees of success. But this most recent time, I was doing pretty well, right? I was having to regularly file my nails, keep them trimmed, cleaning underneath them. And I had really thought I had this problem licked. And then 2020 hit, all right? And I think for half of this year, I've had these things chewed down to the quick. They're not so bad right now because I started working on this sermon and, well, you know, it got that ball rolling again. But at one point, even while I was typing the sermon, I had this thumbnail chewed down so low that every time I would hit the space bar, it hurt. Do you suppose that God was trying to tell me something? Do you suppose that I kind of had to listen to this sermon before I preached it? You bet. Have you stressed about anything this year? Maybe about having to wear a mask, or maybe other people not wearing their masks, about possibly getting sick, or maybe a loved one getting sick. Maybe you were stressed about the election, right? Or some of the social unrest that was going on around this country. Maybe you were stressed about your jobs. Or I tell you one thing that's affected a lot of people during all the lockdown and closures and that sort of thing is we've been having to either spend a whole lot of time with a few people or not getting to spend a lot of time with some of the people we would like to, and some of our relationships have been strained to the breaking point. We worry about all kinds of things, right? We worry about money. We worry about our possessions. We worry about our jobs. We worry about our families, our friends, our coworkers. We worry about our health. First thing that we need to be very clear on is that when Paul says, do not be anxious, when Jesus says, do not worry, this is a command. It's a matter of obedience. This isn't optional. This isn't just an opinion. It isn't just good advice. It is a matter of spiritual faithfulness. Paul not only doesn't see worry as inevitable, he sees it as sin. Now, this command is written in the sense of stop doing what you are doing, right? In other words, the Philippians were worried. This isn't just a modern issue, all right? We're not the first to fight anxiety, and Paul offers the Philippians, and he offers you and me a way out. With God's help, we can completely defeat worry. Now, let me give you three reasons why worry is such a big deal, why worry is a sin, but I also want to give you three remedies, three solutions. Now, the first reason that worry is such a destructive thing in our lives is that worry distracts us from what matters most. Right? Worry has a way of taking our eyes off of what is important and keeping them off of the things that matter most, and keeping them on things that are only of secondary importance or worse. You see, when you begin to worry about a thing, you take your sight off of God and you put them on whatever it is that you are worried about, right? And you take like complete ownership of that thing, of that concern, and it begins to consume you. You've taken it out of God's hands and you have said effectively, God, I don't want your help on this. I am dealing with this on my own. But if we won't trust God with the little things, the secondary things, how are we going to really learn to trust him in the big things ultimately? This is why Jesus says in Matthew 6:25, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Of course, the answer Jesus expects is yes. Yes, my life is more important than those things that I worry about. So why do we spend so much of our time and energy worrying over little things that we can't change when that time and energy could be focused on much more productive things? Worry is like a fog that keeps you from seeing, that brings a city to a standstill. I'd read that according to the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that a dense fog that covers an area of 7 city blocks 100 feet deep is composed of like one glass of water divided into 60,000 million drops, right? There's not much there, but it can bring a city to a standstill. And this is what worry does to your life, right? It takes what is in the grand scheme of things, something very small, but breaks it down into its most nitty-gritty until it completely clouds your view of everything. And it keeps you from seeing and acting on what matters most. So what's the remedy, right? Well, what's the solution to this? Well, Paul gives us one. Give your worries to God. That's the remedy. Give your worries to God. Paul doesn't just say, don't be anxious about anything, period, and then move on to the next subject. He gives us a better alternative to worry, right? Do this instead. And here's what it is. Don't worry about anything, but in everything, all right? Notice how you don't have to worry about anything because you can pray about everything. In everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. All right. Paul understands that we have real concerns, that we have legitimate issues in life, these stresses that life brings to our front door, like the UPS truck dropping off packages, from all of your online Black Friday shopping. Right? And we just can't ignore those things. We can't just pretend they're not there. We've got to do something about it. And so Paul says, pray, give it to God. And he uses three synonyms for prayer: prayer, supplications, and requests. Now, this first word, prayer, is usually the word that's used for intercessory prayer, prayer that intercedes between God and someone else. This is the word for prayer, for praying for other people. This is about praying about your relationships, right? Now, how many of your worries are about relationships, right? Well, instead of worrying about them, you can pray about them. Instead of worrying about your spouse, your children, your parents, your friends, your coworkers, you can give them to God in prayer. That's what Paul says. Now, supplications. Some translations use the word petitions. All right, these are those urgent pleas to fill some vital need. All right, these are the kinds of issues that completely wreck your schedule and shred your budget. All right, these are the money problems and the health concerns that can send us into a complete tailspin. But Paul says, no, you can give those to God too. And then requests. It's kind of this generic catch-all term for any sort of need that we might have. In other words, there is no need too small or too big that you can't give it to God in prayer. Ran across this little piece that I think maybe helps put this all into perspective. Money can buy a bed, but it cannot buy sleep. Money can buy amusements, but it cannot buy happiness. Money can buy companions, but it cannot buy friends. Money can buy books, but it cannot buy brains. Money can buy a house, but it cannot buy a home. Money can buy medicine, but it cannot buy health. Money can buy flattery, but it cannot buy respect. Now, the importance of consciously and verbally turning these things over to God in prayer is that it is a return of trust, an act of trust. Right? These anxieties, they enter our lives. They demand our time. They demand our attention, our effort. Right? And Satan loves to use them as blinders. All right. And he'll say, you know, don't see that need over there that God is calling you to, because you've got to spend all your time and energy on this problem right here. Or no, you can't grow in this area because you have to focus all your energy on this problem. But prayer slams the door shut in Satan's face, and it turns all of these things over to God, and it frees you to pursue his plans and his purposes. It doesn't just ignore the problem or pretend it doesn't matter, but it does put you in a much better position to deal with them, all right? You have a choice. You can deal with the problems on your own, or you can deal with them with God. Now, the second reason that worry is a sin, that worry is so destructive, is that worry forgets that God knows what you need, right? When we worry, we act like it all depends on us, like we have to take care of everything ourselves, and worry will convince you that you are all alone, right? Anxiety forgets that God already knows everything that you need. Here's what Jesus says in Matthew 6:26. Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Right? Of course you are. And then in 28 and 29, he says, and why do you worry about clothes? See the lilies of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. Right? So birds and animals, flowers and plants, right? They don't spend time worrying about the future. They're not plagued with anxiety, and yet they manage just fine. But we worry, don't we? And the more we worry, the more we forget about God. Arthur Summers Roach wrote, "Worry is a thin stream of fear, trickling through the mind. If encouraged, it cuts a channel into which all other thoughts are drained." Right, you may start with just a little worry, right? But it slowly begins to engulf your whole life. And the more of your life it consumes, the further away you push God. So what's the answer? What's the solution? The remedy? Well, Paul tells us, be thankful for what God has already given. Be thankful for what God has already given. Instead of worrying and forgetting that God knows what you need, we need to remember what God has already given. You see, knowing that God has taken care of us in the past helps us trust him in the future. Paul doesn't just tell us, hey, pray about it, turn all your worries over to God, all right? This isn't just about, you know, taking your prayer list to God, because Paul adds two essential words. All right, we're to pray about all these things, but he says to do it with thanksgiving, with thanksgiving, all right? And that makes all of the difference. And it's super appropriate given the holiday we just celebrated this last week. Be thankful for what you already have. Right? Give glory to God for what he's already given you. You see, when you are worried about something, you tend to forget about the blessings you already have. Anxiety convinces you that your current blessings don't matter. They don't make a difference. But thanksgiving forces a change in perspective. All right, and you realize, wow, God really has taken care of me. He really has guided me. He really has guarded me. Maybe I can trust him in this thing too. And it isn't just that you can turn your concerns over to God, all right? God knows what you need. He wants to meet those needs, and he has the power to meet those needs. He can do something about it. He is able to provide. So what thanksgiving does is it takes away the pressure of anxiety. It gives us assurance. When they were building the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco, one of the great fears was that they would lose dozens and dozens of lives, as was very typical in any high-rise construction in those days. Well, the builder decided at great cost, especially in Depression-era dollars, to construct a large set of safety nets underneath the bridge as it was being constructed. All right, and there were officials who protested, saying that such precautions were expensive. They would delay the building as it took time to install these things, and they were concerned. But the net was a great success, right? Not only were many lives saved, but it actually saved money and it sped up construction, because guess what? The workers could work without worrying about falling, all right? They could work more quickly and work more efficiently because they had freedom from worry. They had a safety net. Well, guess what? You have a divine safety net underneath your life, right? That's how God's provision is for you. You can pursue the most important things in life because you know that God is holding you, and it gives you freedom from worry. And when we give our worries to God, and when we are filled with thanksgiving for God's blessings, it comes with an amazing promise. And this promise isn't that God will give you every request that you have, that he will answer every supplication the way that you want. But what he does promise is peace, right? And peace is the opposite of worry and anxiety. Verse 7 says, "And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus." Right? Now, this is a peace that only comes from God. Peace is rest for a weary soul. Peace is comfort for a hurting heart. Peace is the serenity that soothes a troubled mind. And it is rooted in God himself. and it transcends our ability to even understand it. I mean, it doesn't seem to make sense. We can't explain it, but it is very real. And this divine peace, it will guard your heart from everything that worry tries to steal from it. It'll guard your mind from everything that anxiety wants to lay upon it. You see, the true answer to worry is not getting everything that we want, but it is having the peace of God. Now, the third reason why Paul tells us not to choose worry is simply this. Worry doesn't work. Right? It doesn't work. It's ineffective. Anxiety is simply a waste of time and energy. It is not helpful. It is not productive. And that's the ironic thing about worry. It doesn't help the situation about which you are so anxious. Worry focuses so much on the negative that it's unable to act positively in the situation. Jesus says in Matthew 6:27, who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? I'll paraphrase that. It doesn't work. A university actually did a study and, you know, figured out what Jesus was telling us 2,000 years ago, right? 40% of the things that we worry about, they never happen, right? 30% of the things we worry about are concerns of the past that we can't change anyway. 12% are needless health concerns. 10% are just petty, trivial issues. Only 8% are legitimate concerns. Yet we expend so much time and energy worrying about the other 92% of the things that we can't do anything about the 8% that matters. It's like this woman who spent her whole life worried to death about cancer. She talked about it frequently. She worried about it constantly. The slightest little thing sent her trembling to the doctor every time. Finally, she dies in her late 80s of a heart attack. Our English word worry actually comes from an old German word that means to choke or to strangle, right? And that's what worry does to your ability to live life. It chokes and strangles your ability to live the life that God intended for you to live. Worry changes nothing but you. Right? It's the leading cause of most major causes of death, including heart disease, cancer, lung disease, accidents, suicide. Right? Anxiety leads to depression, ulcers, irritable bowel syndrome, various skin conditions, chronic headaches, insomnia, high blood pressure, digestive disorders, and sexual dysfunction, all right, amongst many other conditions, all right? So not only can worry not add a single hour to your life, but it can take years away. So what's the remedy? Well, instead of worrying about all the negative things that anxiety wants you to focus on, the remedy is to focus on the positive. Focus on the positive. And this is more than just the power of positive thinking. It's more than thinking happy thoughts or looking on the bright side. But it's learning to focus your mind on all that is good so that your mind is shaped by what is good. The very next verse in Philippians 4, verse 8, listen to what it says. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about such things. Right? Worry gets you dwelling, gets your mind dwelling on everything negative, right? And you begin to think that everything that could go wrong will go wrong. And you only think about everything that isn't right, everything that isn't the way you want it to be, all the times that you failed. But Paul says, no, set your sights on what is good. Set your sights on anything that is excellent or praiseworthy. Now, I believe there is a time for singing the blues, all right? So listen to your blues, listen to your down tempo tunes in a minor key. I think there's a place for the country tear in your beer music. I mean, just look at the Psalms. The Psalms are filled with the blues. But if it gets to a point where that's all that you watch, all that you read, all that you listen to, and it's all dark and depressing and negative, it's just going to drag you down with it. One of the things that I've learned about guns is that a bullet always hits where it's pointed. Now, not necessarily where you think it's pointed, but it hits where it's pointed. But if you've done a good job zeroing in your sights, it's going to point the gun wherever your sights are aimed. And if everything is focused in the right place, that's where the bullet's going to hit. Now think of, apply that to life. If everything that you're focused on in your life is negative, then you are zeroing the sights of your soul on the negative. And so guess where your life is going to hit, all right? Guess where it is aimed. That's where your life's going to hit. If everything is aimed at the negative, that's what you're going to hit. So listen to your sad song, but then give it to God. All right, thank him for his many blessings, and then focus on something that's going to pull you out of it, all right? Focus on something that encourages the heart, that lifts the spirit, that heartens a weary will. And when you do that, guess what will happen? Well, Paul says in verse 9, practice these things and the God of peace will be with you, right? Not just peace, but the God of peace. God himself will be with you. Right. This is the second time in three verses that Paul promises us peace. Bruce Larson, in his book, Believe and Belong, talks about a time when he ministered in downtown New York City. And of course, in a fast-paced city filled with hustle and bustle like New York City, there were quite a few of his parishioners that would come to him with concerns about anxiety and worry. And they sought his counsel. And what he would do is that he would take them out of the building and they'd walk down the street to the RCA building. And out in front of the RCA building is this statue of Atlas, all right? And he's hunched over, his arms are outstretched, and of course he is holding the world on his shoulders, all right? And this guy, this statue is built like Schwarzenegger in The Terminator, every muscle bulging and straining to the limit. It is taking all of his effort to carry the weight of the world. And Bruce would say, you have two choices in how you live. One of them is like this. You can carry the weight of the world on your shoulders. And then he would turn around and directly across the street is St. Patrick's Cathedral. And he would take them across the street, and there at St. Patrick's was another statue, this one of Jesus. And Jesus is standing there. And in one hand, effortlessly, Jesus is holding out his hand, and he is holding the whole world in his hand. No bulging muscles, no strain, no effort at all. And Bruce would say, you could live like that with the weight of the world on your shoulders, or you can live like this and trust in the one who's got the whole world in his hands. The choice is up to you. Are you trying to carry the weight of the world on your shoulders, or are you going to let him carry it for you? Thank you, and God bless.